Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, it's your brother, Brian Mary Deese. Welcome to this Class War Battlefield Podcast segment. This is a little bit of an update on the election. Well, excuse me, on the debate, not the election, but the debate. And what transpired with Tulsi Gabbard and the sudden full course blitz the media made against her. Remember, I said in the last episode that you have to look at the 10 people running as if, or excuse me, not to 10 people, to 20 people running, as if you're looking at a chessboard. There are, as I also mentioned, there are, in the coming up third debate, there are specific people that the DNC is making sure end up on that stage. They know they can't take away Bernie Sanders because, well, Bernie Sanders' popularity is too far up there. But the goal is to surround him with so many people who the DNC itself likes that one of them will have to stick. Now, the DNC itself, because again, remember, I said before that I try to make these podcasts with a view to the future. So how is it going to be able to help you in the future? Remember, the DNC itself, during the debates and after the debates, has been working on internal polling. They've been working with Google to look at very, very detailed analytics. They are, in other words, mining tremendous amounts of data to figure out how these debates are impacting people's minds. I imagine they're also doing it with Facebook too. But what they see is what they saw at the end of the last debate. Not two, but one. Tulsi, top candidate that's trending. Tulsi is the one getting a lot of the press on the internet, social media. Tulsi is benefiting from the people flocking to her campaign site and donating. Tulsi's rising. And I imagine that their internal polling is telling them that Tulsi's not rising among traditional Democrats. And I apologize. Let me take that phraseology away. They, with all of these individuals running, the Democratic Party has an analysis going. And in that analysis, for each person that is running, they suggest, and by the way, this is only speculative, but I could see them doing this. Because any good party would do this. This is why you have polling data. They have an analysis going with each person running. And in that analysis, they figured out a couple of things. One, what voters are likely to be attracted to each individual who's running. Two, what that individual needs to do to attract more individuals to them, or more voters to them. And three, what segments of the population are the most vulnerable in switching their allegiances? Now, for the majority of the people running, they know they're never going to get the people that, you know, they're never going to get the voting that they need to actually, you know, make it to the debate stage. That's not the point. The point was to dilute the field enough to stop any true ally of Bernie Sanders from making it past the second debate. That was the point. Bernie Sanders only had one true ally running with him, or so it seemed, and that would be Tulsi Gabbard. The problem is, I think it was within 24 hours of the debate ending, Tulsi Gabbard had passed the first threshold needed to make the third debate. She needed 130,000 individual donors. She's already there. She's well over that, in fact. Which is crazy because prior to the debate, she hadn't even passed the threshold. After the debate, within 24 hours, if memory serves me correctly, well, currently she's at 145,000. She needed 130. She was also, again, the most sought candidate on Google again after this one, after this election. But this says something to the Democratic Party. It says that despite what they're trying, despite their effort, because again, it was all about the 20 people running was all about diluting the field. Despite their efforts, it ain't working. She is still ascending. So now, and this is where it's really going to get dirty, and this is why I'm doing this update. Part of the criteria necessary to make the third debate is you have to find three acceptable polls that have you at, I think it's 3% or more. Now, for some reason, Kamala Harris, actually, I know why Kamala Harris has 3%, because Kamala Harris is actually conservative. She is that nice combination of conservative, liberal, that many non-black white people appreciate and like. She's the type that'll put her own people, put black people in prison for marijuana, and then, as it was stated, laugh about it. They like that. Because that means she's not going to be too friendly to black people. They don't have to worry about her giving away too much stuff to that community. That's why they liked Obama, because Obama would talk to us in a manner where it sounded like he was always scolding us. So they like that. That's why she's there. Tulsi Gabbard, it's going to be a little bit more difficult for her to get those polls. Why? Not because the data isn't out there, but because the machine that is the Democratic Party is so ingrained in the media sphere, and this is why you see the media acting as the attack arm of the Democratic Party right now against Tulsi Gabbard. It is likely that a lot of, and I'm sorry if you think this is conspiracy theory, but this really is, if you aren't watching what's happening and understanding that you're seeing a deep conspiracy, you aren't paying attention. You're not paying attention. Those newspapers, which are conglomerized right now, ladies and gentlemen, hear me again, they're conglomerized. The majority of the newspapers in this country are owned at least a lot of your dailies are, they're owned by a couple of companies. And those companies are part of the establishment. Do you think if the Democratic Party doesn't want Tulsi Gabbard on that stage, that they're, that she's going to find it difficult to locate three polls that are acceptable to the DNC, which has her at 3% or higher? You better believe it. You better believe it. It is time that we understand what is happening to this country. It's very much time that we understand what's happening to this country. There has been a fight going on for a long time, for a generation, over corporate power. Many conservative liberals, many liberals, many progressives in the 1980s voted with their race and voted with what would be best for not even their communities, but what they thought would be good for their race. And it's time to acknowledge that. They feared welfare because it would go to black people and brown people and non-white people. They feared the ghettos because that's where most of their great-grandparents and grandparents had come from. And they feared being back in those ghettos, an equalizing of the playing field, as they say. They didn't want that, because that would mean that their standard of living might suffer. And their standard of living was all they cared about, not anyone else's. And so they voted for corporate-friendly policies. They voted for corporate-friendly policies that benefited corporations, believing, because there's a history of this in this country, that if they voted for the corporations would love them and cherish them and take care of them because they were white. You go back to the 1890s and we talk about the labor struggles, but we fail to realize that that wasn't all white people who participated in them. In fact, hyperly Americanized white people who had been here for one and two and three generations, they fought against the labor unions. And the same thing was true in the 1920s, the 1910s, the 1930s, the 1940s. And it seemed to be all of that fighting against those elements paid off in the 1950s and 60s, except for, you know, the social upheavals that came with the civil rights movement, which spawned other things. And then they fought them off. They had an agreement, they thought, this social contract. We protect the corporations, and the corporations protect us white people. Corporations turned on you. They have no allegiance to nobody but that bottom line. And so what we're now seeing is a corporate system that was believed to be the savior of the white community in this country, turning on it, destroying it, the community, and I mean. And they can't understand it. They don't get why. Why is this happening? This is not going to get better, family. No, it's not. Oh, if you think that it's rough at this moment in time, how they're treating Tulsi Gabbard, wait. Let her make the debate stage, because they're not going to be able to stop it, I believe. I think she will make the debate stage on for the third one. She'll be the 10th one to do it, to make it. Then they're going to start to really panic. And even if she doesn't, Tulsi Gabbard isn't going away. She's not going away. You need to pay attention, because in addition to all of this in the background, there is something else happening. And I give great admiration and praise to Brad Friedman, who's been working a story for nearly the last 2 decades. He has a podcast called The Bradcast. And it's a tremendously important podcast. He's been, since Donald Trump was elected, I don't believe it was so before he was elected. Maybe. But he's been producing new episodes every single day. Yeoman's work. And he's been talking about these new, not new anymore, touchscreen voting machines. He's been talking about it. He has been talking about it. And unfortunately, I don't know how many people are really listening to him, because if you're concerned about what's happening right now, I'm terribly concerned about what's happening now, but this isn't my fear, what's happening now. My fear is what's going to happen when we start to vote in November 2020. The Democrats and Republicans know that they are pushing machines onto the public that are terribly vulnerable to hackers. They know it. But that's the point. And I've made this statement before. They want hacker-prone systems. Why? Not because they're afraid of Russia. Not because they're afraid of Venezuela, Syria, pick a place. They want them to be hacker-prone because they want to be able to hack them. There were a couple of good documentaries that came out during the first decade of the century on what happened in 2000. And all I can say, family, is these people are prepared for a coup. We had one already. We've had two of them, I believe, but definitely 2016. But they are prepared to utilize those machines against the American public. That's the only reason why you dismiss all of the warnings of people who have been telling you about these problems for the last decade and a half or more, is because you want those flaws there. They're going to try to isolate Bernie Sanders in the next debate, to say nothing about the fourth one. They want him to be isolated, because everyone's going to pile up on him. That'll move Elizabeth Warren to the forefront to be his champion. And then when he is neutralized, and it's funny, I remember Jordan Sheridan saying this, but I was saying the same thing. When he's neutralized and she steps forward, then they'll turn on her. I mean, look, they're not, if they can get her to the White House, they're fine with that. They're good with that. Their biggest thing is going to be maintaining the status quo. So she's kind of like, you know, Obama in that level, or in that aspect. This is a big game of chess, family. This is a big game of chess. And you got to keep your eyes open because things are going to get a little bit sketchy as we go towards this next election. See, because they're not only concerned about the presidency. That's where our minds are focused on the presidency. The DNC, don't forget, handles all elections from the presidency down. They see that there are challenges happening in many districts that progressive and socialists are stepping forward and saying, nope, time for a new vision. And because these people know history, what history says is that in the 1930s, when the Depression obviously was going in full-fledged, the full mold, the liberals took a beating, a bad one. Communists and socialists were elected in their place. And they governed well. And people liked them. And that's why we got the 1950s, the quote McCarthy era. Don't ever let them fool you about that McCarthy era. They wanted that. They needed it. Did they need it? Because they had to get rid of all of them. Those people who had made the liberal class look inept. It is. Made them look incapable of handling a true crisis. They were. And that's where we're at again. We've been in a depression for 10 years, family. I mentioned in the last podcast that I've been reading this book called Friendly Fascism. It's a really interesting book. I urge all of you to go out there and get it. And when I say reading, I mean listening to. I bought the audiobook. So I listen to it while I'm at work. And one point that was made that needs to be stressed over and over and over and over again, because this is an important point, especially modern parlance. The word recession, and he says this in the book. This is a professor. This is a guy who used to work in the government. He understands power. The word recession came into use in the 1970s. It came into use as a replacement for the word depression. It came into use as a replacement for the word depression. We have been in a depression for the last 10 years. Things have not gotten much better. We need a new vision. And what their polling is telling them, what the data that is coming out from the people who are challenging these long-sitting congressional persons, what it's telling them is this. The people are tired of the nonsense. They're tired of the lackluster leadership. They're tired of the visionless people who are feeding the public nonsense. And they know they can't hold it back. So what do you do when you can't hold back a flood? Well, unfortunately, this isn't water. Because you cannot, you know, with a flood, you get run over. But what do you do when you see that there is a political insurgency starting to take shape? Psychological operations. That's what you do. You try to change the public's perception of that insurgency. You destroy the insurgency and make sure that the public never realizes that the reason the insurgency was created was because the regular leadership had failed so badly. In other words, what you're seeing against Tulsi Gabbard, what you're seeing motivated and maneuvered against Bernie Sanders, this is a psychological operation. ladies and gentlemen. And if it does not work, if it does not work, I mentioned, you know, that Google, or maybe I didn't mention this, Google suspended Tulsi Gabbard's ad account for 6 hours after the election, I think it was, after the election. There's just been all kinds of stuff, but if this doesn't work, if they can't, with this psychological operation, stop people from moving in this direction, voting for these things that they want, whether it's Bernie Sanders, Tulsi Gabbard, some socialist leader, what have you, then you get to real operations. This is really where we're, what we're facing, family. This is really what we're facing. And that's why I felt I needed to do this addendum. We are looking at several decisions that have to be made at the upper regions of this society. And what is decided will impact this country for the next 10 years and possibly for the next 100. You have a movement in this country. It's still in its very, very early developmental stages to replace the touch screen scanning voting machines with paper ballots again. And you have corporations who are against that. And by the way, this is something that we all need to be making into a huge, you know, like political message. But you have corporations who are against it. They're against it because they make money, obviously, from the they make money from the machines that are being sold. But more important, many of these companies are connected to the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, or should I just say they are connected to the establishment. And there is a move because of the... There's still that fight going on in the establishment family. They are committed to creating this country which is beholden to corporations and companies. See, because the old order, which was in charge for quite a long time, call it the New Deal order, is almost gone now. And it's been replaced by a much more greedy and psychopathic group. I want you to sometimes, and I mean this, I want you to sometimes take a look at Jeff Bezos. Find a picture where he's smiling and look at him. You know, we often talk about psychopaths in the elite class, but do we really realize a psychopath when we see him? I saw a picture of that man smiling and my whole body shuddered. The animalistic tint in his eyes, the almost beast-like a sneer in his mouth. Oh, you're dehumanizing him. No, I'm calling him for what he is. There's a belief that the Hopis say that we are coming to the end of an era. Don't know exactly when that era is going to end, but we are coming to the end of it. Actually, we feel it presently. Rather, it's going to be in 2030, 2040, 2050. It'll definitely be before the end of this century, and likely towards the middle of this century. The cycle, the era, which we are coming to the end of, is called the animal, or the time of the animal, where humans, man, mankind, humankind, has been living and learning about the animalistic side of our being. And that time is coming to an end, and we are moving then from the animal period, or the period of the animal, to the period of the human, where everything that we learned in that time period and the time before that will be transferred to this incredible period of time of tremendous, tremendous possibility and growth. When I look at a person like Jeff Bezos, and I see the glare in his eye, and I see that grin that is almost like a wolf grinning, it takes me all the way back to some of the grins that I saw in those Lynch photos. And I realize that is an animalistic view. And if you read anything about psychopaths, you understand that their brain functions are not like, you know, other human brain functions. They're a minority of the population. But their brains function in a way that, you know, if you measure their brain, if I remember correctly, most humans have a lot of frontal lobe and top lobe activity. With a psychopath, they still have, you know, frontal lobe activity, but they have far more activity in the more primitive brain, which is the lower parts of the brain. And by the way, this isn't me saying this. This is scientific evidence. Psychopaths have a way of thinking that is more primitive. They reason tremendously different than other non-psychopaths. They see things in a way that is destructive to those who aren't psychopaths, but makes pure sense to them. I mean, no one ever really talks about it, but the Ku Klux Klan, the whole idea of the Klan. The Klan typically turned into a tribe. You'd have a couple of clans come together and form a tribe. But the Klan was a set number of groups of genetic strains. 2 or 3, maybe 4 or 10 would form a clan. And they'd live in the same region. They'd basically form a community. And then you'd get other clans, and then you'd put them together and they'd form a tribe. In other words, there's a major connection between psychopathy and the whole clan mentality that we won't even see. And when I look at the upper elite, especially when I think about how they treat other people outside of the elite, they have that clan mentality, that tribal mentality. Making me wonder if the problem with the elite really is that a bunch of them are just psychopathic. I don't even believe that we have to wonder that anymore. The evidence is suggestive. I remember stories that I read and was told about what happened in the South when you'd have European Americans, white people, wanting to come out for civil rights for black people and the treatment of black people in a more humane manner. And this was back in the 50s and 60s. So, you know, you tend to say, well, come on, man, it was back then. But I want you to really listen to this, because I've seen this other places. This isn't just a southern thing. I live in the north. And I can tell you right now that there are certain things you do not want to do up here, because this will happen to you. So this is what I remember hearing and stories that I read. These people would go on record, or excuse me, not go on record technically, because, you know, they'd always tell whoever was interviewing them not to use their names and what have you. And they'd say, I'm afraid of coming out for these more liberal causes. Because down here, or over here, if I was to do that, my business would dry up. My business might be bombed. My house might be bombed. That's a Klan mentality. It is in the interest of the Klan and its survival that you do not demonstrate any mercy, any compassion to those who are outside the Klan. If you do that, then you do not deserve to live. And this is the psychopathy that is afflicting the upper elite. The upper elite. I mean, it demonstrates to you why people like Bobby Kennedy, but it is technically Bobby Kennedy, but Robert Kennedy had to die. Because he broke the Klan rule. You're not supposed to show that kind of emotional loyalty to the underclass. They're not part of this. They're not part of this. What are you doing? He refused to turn back, so they killed him. Oh, they killed him. They needed him dead. The bad thing about all this is, things have gotten to the point in the society, because of that way of looking at things, where the society is in deep, deep degradation. It is degrading. And so you have these clans of people at the upper end of the society making moves and maneuvering and acting as if everything is great, while everything around them is falling apart. And they don't even realize it. This concerns me. Because while they're not realizing it and they're having all tons of fun, there are people who realize it. And I believe Jeff Bezos is one of them. These people will take advantage of the problems created by the social degrading or degradation, and they will move themselves into a position of power. And then they'll do exactly what every mafioso crime boss does. When they realize the situation is what they would term dire, and you need some kind of change, they put a stranglehold on power. They eliminate those people who could challenge their power. And then they rule like a dictator. I'm not saying this is going to be Jeff Bezos doing this. But after listening to the Death Throes of a Republic, I've listened to it about 20 times, you know, since March. I continue to listen to it because it's so fascinating. What I do realize is that the opportunity for consolidating power is ever present as a society convulses from the internal decay that comes from the inability of the elite to actually take care of that society. I'm not going to use the word govern it, because the problem isn't governing. It is the inability of them to take care of it. They don't see the need and the importance to contribute the funds necessary to keep the society sustainable and to keep it strong. And so you move through a period of time of rather stable existence while this degradation is happening. And then you get to a time where it's not sustainable. And people start crying out because the conditions are getting harsher and harsher. And they're not able to sustain themselves while those conditions worsen. And now the problem arises. Because in the elite, now you got factions that are trying to figure out what to do. And all of them are based around how can we maintain our position of power. And they fight. And they fight. And they convulse. And that's when your strong men appear. And they start picking off portions of the elite. Not violently, no. They start convincing them that, look, I got the answer. Let me take control of everything and we'll fix this. Donald Trump may have actually done that. Because as I said in the last podcast, I now see that the elite, especially through the media, they wanted him as president. They wanted him as president. But so this strong man says, let me deal with this. Let me take care of this. And there's those who don't want him to. There's those who do. That causes more instability among them. And through that instability, they consolidate their power. Well, they somewhat consolidate their power. And then they step into power. And they govern. And they rule. And anyone who doesn't like it, you can leave or you can leave, if you know what I'm saying. We are heading into a dangerous time period. I will never forget, Keith Olbermann mentioned when he was doing his series for GQ before he went to work for ESPN, he mentioned early in Donald Trump's tenure as president, that some upper-level army person was heard by reporters saying that it is important for the military that this country has a stable political system, or that it is stable politically. That is to say nothing about social stability. And then that person seemed to hint that if the government continued to be destabilized by Mr. Trump, that the military might have to step in for the betterment of the country. In other words, he was talking about a military coup. Usurping of the people's power by the military. There are many people in the military who would not be against that. We are entering some very interesting times, family. Some times that I'm actually... Sometimes it keeps me up because I see the problems as they're mounting. And there's not much that could be done, save a major mass, tens of millions of people movement. The Hopi also say that right before we are to go through what is called the Third Great Shaking, it's believed to be the Third World War, God, the Great Spirit, the Most High, will make an appearance for all people to witness. I always add that the goal of that is to turn us away from our reckless action. Baba Vanga says that in the Third World War, upwards of 2 billion people could die. This was a major fear of Dr. King. It was a major fear of a lot of people. It's a major fear of me. We aren't as close as we think we are, but we're not as far away either. We have choices to make. We have choices to make. Family, I keep talking about this, but I'm going to say it anyway. First and foremost, obviously this is going to be an episode now, so, you know, thank you for your patience. But secondly, I do have a new podcast coming out. It's going to be leaning towards, you know, black people more, but I invite everybody to listen to it. It's going to be one where I deliver sermons. You're going to learn a lot, and hopefully you like them. Unfortunately, I will be charging for this one because of the amount of time and effort that I'm putting into it. It's not going to be, you know, a ton of money. You're going to be able to access it for a few dollars a month. At present, I'm only going to be able to produce one of those per month. But I'm hoping by the beginning of next year to go up to two, and by the end of next year to be publishing every single week, if not more often than that. But I will let you definitely know more and more and more about that. Towards the end of this year is when I plan on launching, so stay tuned. This is your brother, Brian Meredith. I want to thank you guys all for joining me. Questions, comments, concerns, always reach me at my email address. You can find it on the front of this wonderful, wonderful, well, just look at the cover art. I always have it there. I'm also on a new platform called Anchor.fm. So if you want to look for me there, you'll catch all the new and latest episodes there. Thank you very much. I'll see you on the next one. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio talk shows and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun.